I'm going to start off with a small introduction, a backstory. So today I represent Alpha Technology Group. It's a holding with 9 tech companies. We're almost 250 people. We work in so many different markets. The backstory to that is, I'm going to take you back 18 years ago. This is me. I was in college. I went to major in computer engineering, and I didn't do well on the admissions exam. So they were like, go to electrical. And from the picture, you can see I wasn't the brightest of students. So I graduated from engineering with a 2.41 GPA. I needed a 2.4, but the English teacher liked me, so she gave me that push. My second year through college, I launched my first company, which was essentially a digital agency. So we were a subcontractor to big media agencies, research agencies in the MENA region. Ipsos, MCN, LaborNet, so the Starcom Group, BBDO, all these big agencies used to subcontract their digital work to us. We're a small boutique agency. Then I launched a social media monitoring tool back in 2011, and we saw social media emerge as a new media dimension. And I think that changed the way people consume content. That changed attention spans, captivity. So all these new KPIs we started seeing, and it redefined how people access content and consume content. And then Netflix started disrupting that scheme in the West, and Amazon Prime and all these players. And we wanted to be a part of that. So coming from that media research technology background, I sold that social media monitoring tool I had built. I made an exit, and I started working on my next company, which is Mango Molo. I keep getting asked why Mango Molo. So it's, mango is my favorite fruit. Molo is when you get into an industry that is kind of traditional, and you decide to flip the table and do things differently. So Mango Molo today is a market leader in the MENA. We work with most, if not all, of the big broadcasters, mainly public sector broadcasters. We deliver content to 4 million users every second. So every second, we know how 4 million users all over the world consume content, what triggers specific content consumption habits, where do they consume what type of content, and all these details. Some of the customers you might know, so we work with the Ministry of Information in the Sultanate of Oman, the public broadcaster, the Ministry of Information in Kuwait, Dubai Media Incorporated, Abu Dhabi Media Company. In South Africa, we work with SABC recently and with Centec. And we do work with a lot of private channels and operators. It has become no secret that digital transformation is happening across the broadcast industry. It's tapping into every industry. In fact, everything around us has become connected and has transformed into a digital toolkit that engages with us based on certain data habits. And I mean, as per Gartner, last year, $4.6 trillion was spent on digital transformation. And part of that is the media and the broadcast industry. As per our experience of launching more than 50 platforms, I have put together a list of 4 pillars that I believe are critical for the success and growth of any OTT service. I'm going to go through each one very quickly, but I think those are the most important parts that you need to look at before you even look at launching your platform. So it's CBDT, so content, business, distribution, and technology. And if you get all those, the combination of those put together in the right way, this is how you're going to be able to sustain and achieve the longevity you're looking for and convert that, because at the beginning, it's always a cost center. So the challenge is, how are you going to convert that cost center into a revenue stream so you're going to be able to finance it and create more content, and so it can actually grow and compete on a national or in a regional level or eventually on a global level? The biggest challenge that we see working with broadcasters, be it public broadcasters or sometimes private broadcasters, I mean, if you want to sum it up in a single word, it's Newton's first law, inertia. For people who don't know what inertia is, it's resistance to change. So a lot of the people we work with and a lot of the customers we have met are used to doing things the old way. So they're used to linear broadcast. They're used to distributing to a certain territory for a certain target audience. Technology on the digital broadcast side is a bit different. On the OTT, you're borderless. So you are no longer limited by the coverage area of the satellite you're on or the boxes that you're distributing onto. And that changes the entire game. So you can be a little content producer in Namibia and target your customers all over the world. And if your content has cultural similarity with different cultures, then there's no more boundaries. So we keep hearing that our target audience in a certain country is 3 million people. That doesn't make business sense. That's true. But why are you limiting yourself to that target audience? The technology allows you to scale beyond the borders. So you might as well want to utilize that. I'm going to start with the content part and look at different aspects of that. When we look at content, we see different types. You've got the short form, you've got the long form, you've got the short series, you've got different types of content structures, as we call them in the OTT space. Any good content is good content, and any good content can be monetized and can make money. One of the very popular channels on YouTube, PewDiePie, for some long period of time, it was the number one channel. It's a person who just shares his screen and plays games. And this was the number one channel on YouTube for quite a long time. It was being monetized. So he's just playing games, sharing his screen. So if you are able to reach out to the right audience, any good content can actually make it. And that fight of being the new or the next Netflix, this battle is lost long ago. No matter how deep your pockets are, and no matter how much investment you have, there is no way you're going to compete with these giants. And you don't want to fight that fight. The future is for platforms targeting niche audience sectors. And there is a lot of those, and there is a lot of room to grow. Because if you continue to look at the market from a perspective of where your current territory is, it might not make business sense. But with OTT, you're no longer limited to that market. You're borderless. So it's just people who could be interested in your content. Another perception we get is that old content doesn't work. One of the customers we work with, they've got a network of 12 or 13 different channels. And their most funded channel is their primary channel, obviously. And they recently launched a channel content from the 70s, like 70s and 80s, basically archived content. Channel on the platform. So nostalgia kicks in, a lot of people watch it, the parents want to make the children watch it, and any traffic can be monetized if the right technology is used. If you look at the stats for all the big streaming platforms in the market, so your Netflix, Prime, HBO, etc., and as per the data that we have, and when we look at customer or user acquisition, so what really triggers first comers? And it all goes down to one really good piece of content that can give you the opportunity to scale and to grow a platform. So let's look at Netflix, House of Cards, Narcos. There you go. Everybody came on Netflix. Now the challenge is, how are you going to sustain those? Amazon Prime, 2.5 Men. It's not even a new production. So they went, they got the rights, and there you go. In our region, you've got a local player, which is Shahid, which is bigger than Netflix as well. They do one huge production a year, and this is enough to get users onto that platform. The key to be able to achieve longevity on the content front is to be able to convert your platform from a single entity platform into a hub for aggregation and distribution. There are a lot of smaller players in the market. They don't have to be broadcasters or TV channels. They do not have the means or the capacity to build their own platforms. And they have a few, sometimes they don't have enough content as well. So if you are able to create a shopping mall, let's call it a hub, where those content creators who are essentially not making quite a lot of money on YouTube, can deploy their content on your platform. And the technology today allows you to do prorated distribution, either on the advertising side, sharing revenue based on viewership, or on the subscription or transactional side. And in that case, you don't really need to invest in acquiring all this content. But to be able to get to that phase, you need to achieve a certain reach in terms of eyeballs. Otherwise, it's not going to make sense, and you're not going to be able to monetize for all these content creators. What type of content is a question that we always get asked. So do we invest in sports content because it brings a lot of traffic? Do we go for entertainment, drama, soapies, series, movies, etc.? It depends on your location. Brings you the worst type of audience that you can ever look for. Extremely not loyal. So I mean, they would come, you would see that spike. The next day, they're all leaving. If your competitor brings in the next good sports rights, they're going there. So I mean, it creates some traction for you if you're looking for that. If you can monetize in real time and as this is happening, and sports is usually not evergreen content as well. The minute that is done, it's just going to decay in terms of traffic. Dramas are extremely big. The challenge with dramas is you cannot monetize them the way you do for entertainment. I mean, you can monetize drama with ads and subscriptions, but with entertainment, you can do branded content and different placements. So that gives you different dimensions for monetization. One interesting thing to look at, we call it globalization through localization. So, and I'll give you an example with Netflix as a case study. Somebody in the previous presentation, Leslie, mentioned Squid Game. So Squid Game is a Korean production. It was dubbed and it was placed on Netflix. And this achieved great numbers all over the world. In the country where I come from, Lebanon, Turkish series are more popular than Lebanese dramas and series. And Casa del Papel, another good example. So Spanish production went on Netflix. It was dubbed, subtitled, and there you go. It's a big hit. And you can do the same, whether you do it on the level of the region. So you do it all over Africa. And there are cultural similarities, and people can relate to this content. You can provide it dubbed in that language or subtitled, and people are going to enjoy watching that content. So do not limit yourself to just one single territory. Every content acquisition decision today should be based on data. I mean, you shouldn't care who's doing this production, who's acting in that movie. It should all be data-driven decision. And the beauty about platforms is that you see the data and you see it in real time. So the SABC team, they can open up a dashboard and they can see right now how many people are watching, what is their age groups, what content are they consuming, what content gets them coming back. Do they watch once and they never come back? Where do they leave exactly, at what point in the content? And this allows you to create data-driven content acquisition decision, because at the end of the day, you want the numbers, and that's how you're going to be able to sustain. One very important sector to look at as well is kids, children's content. As per our data, the highest conversion from free users to paid users is on children's content. So children's platforms have the highest conversion from free to paying subscribers. And the beauty about kids is you don't need a big enough catalog. I mean, child psychology, they like one piece of content and they play it 600 times. That's it. And one of the really nice case studies we've worked on is on a kids platform for Abu Dhabi Media, the government of Abu Dhabi. It's called Magic. It used to be a magazine, and they have some animations and content. So they launched with like 600 assets, small assets. And that was an incredible success. It was subscription. You just had to subscribe, integrated with carrier billing and App Store, Play Store, and that did really well. The second pillar is the technology side. Technology should never be a bottleneck for you. Technology should always be an enabler. So it should allow you to scale the platform, be it on the viewership side, be it on the partnership side, be it on the integration side. So it should really be the backbone that allows you to move around and mold your platform whichever way you want. And what you're looking for is really not a product. So you're not just going to go and buy a piece of technology and deploy that. Anyone can do that. What you really need is a partner that can accommodate you on a turnkey basis, because from the initiation, before you start actually building the platform, you need to identify how the numbers are going to add up. You're going to build a business case, and you need to do that. Otherwise, I mean, you're just going to invest a lot of money, and you're not going to recover that investment. Do you want to build the technology, or do you want to buy it? So do you want to use a commercial product, or do you want to build it yourself? If you can have a team of 150 people working on all these huge platforms and devices, that's good. Otherwise, if you want to get to the market quickly, then you'd rather use a commercial product and go to the market with it. You need to make sure that in Lebanon, we call Catholic marriage. So we say Catholic marriages when there's no divorce. So we give that example. So your relationship with a tech company that's going to launch your platform is pretty much a Catholic marriage. So you need to make sure that you've done that right from the first time, because moving is very difficult. Changing is equally difficult. And you get one shot at the user. So you got to get it right from the first time. Otherwise, you're not getting any other chance. So the next time you've got that big event and 100,000 people come in, if you crash, you're going to get that phone call, obviously, the unhappy phone call. And you're going to get people all over Twitter complaining about the system. And most of them would not even come back. So the technology should allow you to scale. It should be enterprise to accommodate your needs, not just today, 5 years down the line. We don't know what's going to happen in 10 years, but let's just say 5 years. So this is what you need to look at. We hear a lot of companies saying we do free solutions and ref shares and these types of things. I mean, everybody's in business to make money. So there's no sense in that. This is what the ideal technology stack of a proper OTT platform looks like. So these are the different pillars. We summarize them into those different categories. So ideally, to be able to launch a proper system, you need to accommodate to all those technical modules as we look at them. Business. And this discussion is changing. So every day we have new ideas as to what is the best way to make money? What is the best way to generate revenues? Is it ads? Is it subscription? Is it PPV, transactional? What is it, sponsorships with different brands or advertisers? So I think there is no one size fits all when it comes to monetization. So ideally, it should always be a hybrid approach. So because different markets have different CPM rates, different markets have different options for payment gateways. So you need to always look at the hybrid monetization. I'll give you an example with a country like Egypt. In Egypt, if the cost to serve content to 1,000 people is higher than the actual money that you would make if you have sold an ad for those 1,000 people. So let's say you get Pepsi ads, the CPM is even less than what it would cost you to deliver content to these 1,000 people. So the AVOD model doesn't really make much sense. So in that case, you need to look at SVOD or TVOD. And how do you define that? A lot of people start looking at the ARPU. We personally do not believe in the ARPU. So we do not advise to limit your entire study on the ARPU, because at some point, the ARPU was zero in that industry. And then Netflix carved their way, and people are willing to pay for that. If you're providing practicality and convenience, people are willing to pay for that. Uber, that's one good example. You can always take a taxi, and it's much cheaper. Why do people go for Uber? It's practical. It's convenient. They know that it's safe. And it's the same with platforms. This is why people pay for Netflix. You can find Netflix content on pirated sites everywhere. So the minute it's on Netflix, the minute later, it's all over the internet. Unfortunately, this is the problem of the industry, piracy, and no one can solve it. So why do people pay for Netflix? It's because they know that they have access to a single platform, good quality content, good subtitles, dubbing if you need dubbing. It's available everywhere. So if you're on your mobile, or you have Apple TV at home, or Samsung, or LG. So this is what people actually pay for besides the content. And this is how good technology serves your business. So again, the approach for monetization should be hybrid. Different markets should have different ways of monetization. And you should be able to do a combination of the different models together. So in a certain market, you can do AVOD. In a different market, you can do a subscription. In a third market, you can do transactional. And that would be defined based on who the audience is in that market. Another part when looking at payment is to look at payment gateways. So there are countries where Apple Pay is not there. There are countries where people have limited access to credit cards. So you need to look at different methods where you need to go to those users and provide them with a payment gateway that they locally recognize. So M-Pesa, you should be able to integrate with M-Pesa. You should be able to have POS integration. So I walk into a store and I can give them $5 and get a coupon, scratch it, go and subscribe to the platform. So this is how you go to the user. So this is how you reallocate this entire platform in a way where you can service any customer across the globe. And that's the entire strategy behind OTT. It's over the top. So technically, you can reach out to anyone on the planet. The last part is distribution. And I think this is the most important part of the entire four-pillar scheme that I have showed you. In essence, I've seen a lot of case studies where you've got a good platform, you've got good content, but just no one has heard about it. Fails. So the distribution strategy was not correct. When you talk about distribution, the more devices you are on, this is definitely going to get you more eyeballs. And smart TVs play a pivotal role in this. So for example, being on, if you want to target the US, let's say, if you're not on Roku, you're missing out on a huge chunk of the audience because a lot of people buy Roku in the US and Canada. If you are in Saudi Arabia, you need to be on Samsung because if you're on Samsung, you're automatically in, I don't know, a million households. And if you have a partnership with the manufacturer where every Samsung sold in Saudi is going to have you pre-installed, then you're in pretty much another 200,000 households a month. So this is, I mean, and this is actually key. To be able to do that, you need to achieve a certain growth in terms of traffic and people need to know the platform for you to strike those deals with the manufacturers. In terms of marketing the platforms, we've seen a lot of marketing campaigns where the broadcasters market the actual platform. And I think the marketing should always be content-centric. So never market the platform, always market the content. I mean, people don't care what platform it's on. People just relate to content. And this is what actually triggers engagement and drives traffic to your platform. So let's say during Netflix, do not market Netflix. You just market the content that is on Netflix. And this actually achieves a much higher conversion. Cross-promotion is always something that is essential as well, especially if you are a broadcaster. So you should utilize your traditional media to promote new media. And the combination of both is actually the recipe to achieve success because the traditional media provides you with access to audience that sometimes new media does not provide you with access to. I don't have a cable TV at home, for example. So anything on cable TV, I completely miss it. I just have TV with apps of streaming platforms. So if you combine both together, this is going to provide you with the best recipe to achieve the highest growth and the fastest time. Operators are also a key player in this ecosystem. Operators have access to users. They have the networks. They have the reach. And bundling with operators, creating partnerships with operators, this is also key. We have tested that in Egypt, for example. We did a partnership with Orange, where we launched a TV product for them, and then Orange would actually promote it on their network, take a rev share. We were reaching 2 million subscribers a day. A country like Egypt is massive, just because we had that partnership with the operator. So those are things that you need to look at, and I hope that this was helpful.